Radio Ghana.
And live from our national studios here in Accra, and networking with all our regional FM stations, and also on the internet at www.gbcghana.com, we welcome you to Behind the News, where we tell you about the news from the perspective of the newsmakers and the experts. My name is Kingsley Obinchere. For tonight, the saga of the four subsidy and petrol price increases. Labour continues to mount pressure on government to restore the subsidies. Else, it's a Nigerian situation on hand, then we'll find out shortly. Another pressure group, Coalition Against Corruption, petitions charge to investigate allegations of corrupt practices in public institutions. And Kofodia residents disgusted with Trump operators passing vulture meat as chicken. Police arrest two people. We'll find out more about this story. It's Behind the News, and as usual, you can get us on 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we move on with our first item. The removal of fuel subsidies in Nigeria nearly brought the country's economy on its knees following strike actions by unions. A similar exercise was carried out in Ghana late December, that is after the Christmas festivities. But government quickly cushioned public sector workers with early salary payments for January. Notwithstanding this, Ghanaian unions have called on government to restore the fuel subsidies, since salary payments in mid-month is a temporary solution to workers' plight over the fuel hikes. NAGRAT, which speaks for graduate teachers, holds a similar view and wants the tripartite committee to fast-track salary negotiations. We have joining us on the line to explore the issue further the Secretary General of the Ghana TUC, Kofi Asamoah. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, you are talking about the restoration of subsidies by government. What about it now, since it's been in place for some time?
You recall that since the increase was announced by the National Petroleum Authority, the TUC the following day issued a statement condemning the increase. One on the timing, when we were in Christmas, and everybody, as at that time, was relaxing. Some public sector workers had then not been paid. So, yes, we complain about the timing. We also complain about the fact that the increases was too steep, and that if you increase fuel, it has a repercussions on almost the pricing of goods and services. Generally, we also indicated that the whole of 2011, there were two increases, one in January 2011 and the other one in 28 December. And cumulatively, there was close to about between 30 to 60 something increase in fuel for last year, as against about 20% salary increase that public sector workers rarely got during negotiation. So we reported about the fact that the increase had brought about untold hardships to working people and their family, and indeed Ghanaians. Almost prices of goods and services are shot up so high. You also record that January parents have to really be paying school fees. So immediately after the first statement, the TUC called a press conference and strongly indicated that the increases were born out of government's desire to remove subsidy generally. And we said that, yes, Ghana as a country hadn't developed to a level where subsidy could be removed completely. The argument was that subsidies ended up benefiting the rich as against the poor. But you would also agree with me that Ghana here, we have about 80% informal economy, and a chunk number of Ghanaians who cannot make ends meet, who are poor, who have minimum incomes, who cannot contain that. So we did not accept that argument of government to say that they were withdrawing their subsidies in order to use that money for infrastructure development, what have you, and due government's attention that it has brought about serious hardships to Ghanaians. Again, government invited us to a meeting last Friday, and at the meeting we met the Association of Ghana Industries, the Employers Association, the Chamber of Commerce, the Bankers Association, and other groups. And when we even drew government's attention that this major policy of subsidy withdrawal is such an important policy that should have had some consultations with stakeholders. Unless I forget, there was no consultation at all with stakeholders like the TUC, organized labor, and other related bodies. So we felt that government didn't handle the issue very well and asked that the subsidy should be retained. The subsidy should be, restored. Government mentioned that it had put in some measures. One of the measures was to pay public sector workers earlier than the scheduled time. And we thought that paying people earlier before payday doesn't bring about any effect of cushioning workers out of these huge increases. They also mentioned that they were going to import buses. And it raised the question about if you are bringing in such major increases, we thought that you should along the line and simultaneously thought about bringing what can also cushion workers out of that. So there's been a general viewpoint of labor that removal of subsidy completely would definitely affect the poor in society. It will raise prices of goods and services in a way that will bring untold hardships to Ghanaians generally. So we insisted on still the restoration. Normally the argument is being made that elsewhere there is no subsidy. And that elsewhere that they are referring to, perhaps developed countries or what have you, you would notice that over there are cheap public transport systems, the buses, the rail, and everything goes on. So somebody may not even be interested in using his or her car as against joining public transport. So, something of that sort is not here. So ever since this increase came, the point is that there has been huge increases in goods and services to understand that it is affecting working people.
If I can please come in here. The argument is also being pushed by some economists, even some not in government directly, that subsidies are not sustainable over the long period. So it means the economy is being hurt when it is sustained. How do we respond to that one?
The point is that who are you managing? You are managing the people. And if even you want to do it, you have to handle it gradually in a way that it will not bring the kind of difficulties. The increases, we are told that, for instance, take the issue of liquefied gas. The argument is that because commercial drivers are using gas, let's increase it by 30%. You also know that almost every home now use liquefied gas. The intention was to sensitize people in a way that we would not be using charcoal and other related things, which has environmental problems for the country. So if you ask that we should pay as much as 30% increase, indirectly what you are asking people to do is to go back to the charcoal and other related things.
So
has not been very happy.
Yeah.
There's been discussions going on over the period. And indeed, we have made government aware that the increases are really steep and unbearable.
Yeah, so you are talking about the fact that government should have consulted, you should have discussed as a body on the issues before. Assuming that you've been consulted, what would you have recommended?
Oh, definitely, if you make this argument of these steep increases, we'll let you know that you cannot do that. Because, you see, what we might have believed is to, why don't we do it in a gradual way? What are the factors prepared to ensure that it mitigates the suffering that will come to ordinary people, as it were? So these were the questions. Perhaps we could have looked for mitigating factors along the line than to just say, damn it, no consultation, only to do a firefighting thing to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah. You've been talking to government for some time. Where are you at the moment in those discussions?
We started discussions on the national minimum wage and the review of the base pay and relativities of the public sector pay before Christmas. So we have never gone far. We submitted our proposal, had some meetings before Christmas, and it was along the line that these steep increases were announced. So we've not gone far in any way.
Well, so what are you thinking about as your next step?
Of course, we're still doing consultation. Leadership is consulting. We're discussing with rank and file members as to what to do. And if it comes to a level where decisions have been taken and we conclude on what to do, we'll do what workers want us to do.
So perhaps you can say there isn't a stalemate yet in your discussions with government. Is that what we have to understand?
No, government, we have made our point clear to government that only a reduction in prices will be what will solve the problem, because otherwise the suffering is just too much. So until they want us to, or they want to call us back for a meeting, there is no discussion going on the increase itself. We met last Friday and nothing has gone on. Getting salaries review is a means to an end and not the end itself. So if they call us to a meeting, we'll be looking at what to do. But meanwhile, we're doing consultations.
We want to thank you very much, Mr. Kofi Asamoah, for your time this evening on Behind the News.
It's a pleasure.
That is the Secretary General of the Ghana TUC. But NAGRAT, as mentioned earlier, also issued a statement calling for the upward salary adjustments and also putting in place measures to make sure that workers are cushioned. Christian Adepoku is the president of NAGRAT, and he's also on the line with us. Good evening, sir. Hello, Mr. Adepoku.
Hello, my brother.
Yes. We understand your members are also calling for a restoration of forced subsidies. Are you pushing it with the Ghana TUC, or you are sending it straight to government?
Thank you very much. The issue that has come up affects every Ghanaian. And as he says, we are not speaking on an island. We are part of the system, and whatever is going on is affecting us. But let me make one thing clear that...
Mr. Adepoku, please, if you can raise your voice a little. It's speaking a little low here.
The that have gone on so far have not included NAGRA. And so as far as we are concerned, maybe TUC is doing the consultation, they will get to us. But we have not been part of the discussions that have gone on. But we have made our point clear that the measures that government announced that they were putting in place to mitigate the effect of the removal of the subsidy, those are not measures that are possible, and they are not measures that can be accepted.
Which of them is not possible? It's a broad range.
Tell a worker that going to pay you your salary earlier than expected, so that it's going to alleviate part of the cost of the increase in salaries, which will increase in which will definitely have a rippling effect on the cost of living in this country. Then we are not being fair to the workers, because for us, even paying workers around 15th to 19th of January is a normal thing in this country. It is not a new thing. So if government is trying to find measures to mitigate suffering, it is not the normal thing that already exists that you announced as a measure to mitigate suffering. Secondly, government talks about payment of arrears as early as possible. Arrears are something that workers are already entitled to. And it's I would say it's a loan that government has enjoyed without even paying interest on. So if you are paying them that arrears as early as possible, it is not a measure to mitigate their suffering. It is rather a way to postpone their suffering, which will eventually come to face them. And so for us, we think that the best thing to do is for government to look at the whole issue again. Yes, for us teachers, we believe that if government is going to stick to its measure of maintaining the subsidies, then we should be thinking of first cost of living adjustment, COLA, for teachers and other workers. Then we should also be thinking of increasing salaries as early as possible, so that we can still continue to receive commensurate salaries that will be able to take us home at any point in time. But what is happening now, we don't think it's something that's acceptable. And the earlier government goes back to the negotiation table with organized labor and have a proper discussion on how these issues can be resolved, the better.
Does it look like we are taking a cue from what happened in Nigeria? That is, looking at the crescendo of call and petitions on government in recent times.
Not necessarily that we are taking a cue from what has happened in Nigeria, but those two issues happened almost at the same time. And the effect that the increase or the removal of subsidies is having on workers in Nigeria the same effect that Ghanaian workers are also experiencing. And so it's not a surprise that what has happened in Nigeria may also happen in Ghana if issues are not handled properly. We don't want it to escalate to that level. But that means that pragmatic steps must be taken as early as possible to ensure that we are able to really mitigate the suffering of the Ghanaian worker and the entire Ghanaian as far as the cost of living is concerned. But if you are not able to do that, people will be caged in one way or the other because cost of living will go up. And in an attempt to really react to it, you see some of these things happening.
Thank you very much, Mr. Christian Adepoku, President of NAGRAT, for your time too. But we move quickly to Tema to speak to the District Council of Labour. And we have joining us Wilson Agana, the Chair of the Tema District Council of Labour. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Master. How are you?
Fine, thank you, and hope you're also faring very well. For you, you are talking about a strike. Is that it?
A demonstration.
A demonstration?
Yes.
Why is it that the bigger body is talking about negotiating with government and talking with government for a response, but a wing like yours is talking about a demonstration?
The bigger body of PUC is the District Council of Labour. That is the powerhouse of PUC. This Council of Labour, they are the political wing of the PUC. They have the power. So, don't be surprised.
But we are looking at the head talking of still discussing and letting government come out with the necessary policies. Are you not just jumping the gun?
No, we are not jumping the gun. Mm-hmm. We are not jumping the gun. All you should know is that if you are hungry, nobody tells you you are hungry. It is not the Secretary General of Ghana PUC who tells Ghanaian workers, for that matter, organized labor, or workers in Ghana that they are hungry, so they should look for food.
So in this case, have you consulted the mother union about your decision?
They are well. You know, immediately the price increase came on, you know, Secretary General came out to condemn it. That was on the 28th or so. Then just when we resume work, then there was a press conference to condemn it. So the mother, you know, is aware we've been consulting. And today, let me tell you, there was a meeting in the whole country, all the regional capitals, preparing. And Tema had yesterday, because that is the industrial hub. We are having the problem. We have the industries. They are suffering. Our companies are suffering.
Yeah. But earlier you listened to the head of the Ghana Trade Union Congress, and he was talking about the fact that they are still consulting. And when it gets to the point, they will do what workers tell them to do. But in this case, a section is taking a decision.
Oh, yes. Like I'm saying, especially anybody, you are riding a four-wheel car. Somebody to ride.
Unfortunately, you've not seen it before, so you can't make that assertion.
No, it's an example I'm giving.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody should not have a car crash. So it's like that. The way somebody is feeling it is different from the way somebody is also feeling. And the industrial top of Ghana, that's where the industry is, that's where the factory is. There's a worker, the condition of Tema is so difficult, it's hard. If you're in Tema, you'll be surprised. Water, everything is expensive.
Yeah.
You can't get that in buying 68 pesos. Now it is, you can think about a fork, both.
Mm-hmm.
But you will not be satisfied.
So you said there was a meeting. What was the outcome, the real issues that came up, and what the workers were suggesting?
Yes, the meeting we discussed the way the thing was announced, the timing, whilst we are celebrating Christmas, which about half of the workers do not have their salary, and we are thinking about that. We are thinking how the school will reopen, how we help our families. You know, in Ghana, the extended families is not a hero for you. You look after your wife and children alone, and thinking of that, then they announce the whole thing. Without consulting, in fact, they did not consult the TUC. At all, a big organization like this who control the workers of Ghana, they did not consult them. They just came out, and the most annoying part is that this is condition, IMF condition, and you just go to it. Why do we live in our country and go to IMF condition?
Mr. Wilson Agana, the issues have been raised, and around this time, school fees will be paid. At every point in time, there will be vacation and school fees will be paid. When is it right to ever increase fuel prices?
But you have not even paid. You have not paid the workers. Already, we are suffering. It's not easy. Whether they've increased or not, it is not easy.
So now
you increase it. Already, the situation is not good. Things are getting worse. they are not getting better. Then you now increase. The cigarette price that come, look at the problem that come before. A lot of people have to go on strike and those type of things before they are paying. The back pay, they've not paid. They've not paid people. Then you just come out. Whether they increase or not, the condition is not all that conducive. It is just difficult in the system.
So to my question, when is it ever right?
No, what happens is that, like I'm saying, still speaking, and we let us respect the structure. Why government could not even consult organized labor for that TEC to discuss this thing for us to say, oh, we think this time it will be so difficult, or, oh, let's come to this. We think if you do it this way, it will be okay. You see now? Then it is at that time that it will be okay to do it. But without consulting and do it, then it is not okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson Agana, for an update on what you are doing in Tema. But Edward Bauer is the communications specialist at the Energy Ministry. He's also on the line with us. Good evening.
Good evening.
Well, I've earlier posed that question, that this is something that has happened in Nigeria. We saw precisely what happened, and many are still blaming IMF for that one. What is this fuel subsidy saga all about?
Thank you very much, and good evening to your listeners. First and foremost, let me apologize for my terrible voice. I lost my voice a bit. But that being said, I think that I still can make some contribution towards the discussion. I think that first, we must appreciate the fact that the decisions that have been taken with regards to fuel subsidy and then fuel increases has not been influenced by any external body. This is a decision that was purely taken based on the facts on the ground, based on the circumstance in which we found ourselves, and based on the finances that we had as a country. And therefore, there were some tough decisions that needed to be taken. You will realize that, before the last time we increased fuel prices was on the 4th of January 2011. Since then, we have not increase fuel prices. You will also appreciate that at the time that the fuel prices were increased, the crude price in the international market was somewhere around $92, and that was what we pegged it on. At the time that we were increasing the fuel prices had increased to the range of around $107 per barrel. And therefore, over the period, government had to find money from its kitty to be able to finance the deficit. And we must also appreciate the fact that this is done in the face of the fact that there are other competing needs. As I speak to you, as of September, even at the time when government started contemplating this, fuel subsidy alone for this country had increased to the level of $422 million. And that, yes, people had made some arguments that because of the fact that we had hedged, that should have, to a very large extent, taken care of the increases in the fuel prices in the international market. But the truth still stands that between that same period, what the country gained in terms of subsidy was just around $200 million. And therefore, as a country, we still needed to cough up another $222 million to be able to do that. The projection was that at the end of the year, we were supposed to be subsidizing fuel products to the tune of roughly around $600 million. You and I know that if you look at even just our projected income that came as a result of our fuel, petroleum product that we got in terms of a Jubilee field, in terms of the income, it's nowhere near even the total amount of money we were using in subsidizing fuel. And therefore, as a country, we needed to choose between subsidizing fuel just for one particular sector of the economy and then looking at other serious competing areas like health, like education, like roads, like telecommunication. And therefore, these were very tough decisions. And I believe that it was in the spirit of this that the president himself said that it was one of the most difficult decisions that he had to really sanction. And I think that we must appreciate it from that angle, but do not for a moment want to create the impression that we were being propelled by the British Wood Institution, and for that matter, the IMF.
Yeah. Edward, you've spoken about it, but you've heard the other contributors mention the fact that the time of increase was bad and there was no consultation at all with the labor union. How do you respond to that one?
I think that I do appreciate the challenges that come with whenever there is always increase in fuel prices, particularly at a time when you have either at the end of the year or maybe at the beginning of the year. These are very challenging periods that you need to do. But you must also agree that there is always no ideal time in increasing fuel prices. Because irrespective of the time that you increase fuel prices, it has an effect, a trickling effect on the rest of the economy, including even our own pockets. And therefore, there is no any ideal time. With regards to the increases in terms of the quotations that were not made, I strongly want to differ a bit. That first and foremost, I think that after all the scenarios had been looked at by government and by those management of it, they felt that it was proper that some consultations needed to be done. Of course, one of the things we do know is that when there is an increase in fuel prices, one of the places that easily is seen has to do with transport costs. And we had also made some calculations and we realized that in terms of just the cost build-up for transportation businesses, fuel prices constitute only 26% of it. And therefore, there was a need to do some calculations yet with the trade unions, the transport drivers, and other things to be able to make sure that at least an increase in the fuel prices will not unnecessarily create havoc.
But the GTUC, Edward, please let me come in. The GTUC is talking about the fact that if there had been consultations and at least you've reached a consensus, it wouldn't have been all these petitions being forwarded to you.
That is the point I was just trying to make. Sometimes consultation, it depends on the level of consultation that we are talking about. And particularly when you realize, of course, it is very important that even in normal good governance, that any time there is a decision that has an effect on people has to be taken, then you must, as much as possible, ensure that consultations are made. And I think the government had tried as much as possible to make these consultations. I may concede that maybe in the eyes of the trade unions, that the consultations were not good enough and that they could have been more extensive than it was.
Mm-hmm.
That is something that we can deal with.
Okay.
It still doesn't take away the fact that there was a need to really increase the prices, or else as a country, we will be heading towards doom.
Is there ever a possibility that it may be reduced with the calls coming?
This is a statement I cannot make. This is a statement that has to be made by the managers of the economy. I am only speaking to the facts that are available to me as of now.
Yes.
But it's in the wisdom of the government. It is believed that there's a need to decrease it, and that there are superior arguments to the fact that, look, reducing the fuel prices will inure to the benefit of Ghanaians. Then I'm sure that the managers of the economy and the managers of the state will definitely look at that.
Edward,
now I am unable to speak to that.
Yes. Any time we speak about the fuel price increases, the issue comes up that we've been told about a hedging policy over a period. How is that hedging policy working?
That was the point I just made.
Mm-hmm.
That at the time that we were looking at the subsidies, the hedging had contributed only $200 million thereabout dollars to the national kitty. But I was just telling you that as at the end of September, the subsidy alone was roughly around $422. And therefore, the hedging was only taking care of only $200 million. And $222 million was still to be sought for from other sources. And the projection was that by the end of the year, that was last year, that was December, in terms of subsidy, we were going to be in the neighborhood of around 600 million. So yes, the hedging was there, but the hedging in itself was not totally enough to really serve as an insurance for the increases in the international market.
So assuming you've been called on to advise now with all that we hear around, what are you going to tell government?
Rather, I think that one of the things I would like to tell rather Ghanaians and not government would be that, yes, this is a very difficult decision that has been taken. But you see, the truth of the matter is that you may have to look at in the alternative. What is the alternative to the decision that has been taken? The alternative to the decision is that we are going to have situations where we will be subsidizing petrol, diesel and other petroleum products at the expense of other critical areas like health, like education, like roads, like telecommunications. So these are the two decisions that Ghanaians will have to look at. And my advice to Ghanaians is that we should find a way of coping with this, with the hope that very soon there will be a reduction in the crude price in the international markets. And with that, there will be a corresponding reduction in the export price.
Edward Bauer, we want to thank you very much for your time this evening. He's a communication specialist at the Ministry of Energy. It's Behind News, and we've been looking at the saga of the four subsidy and petrol price increases and the ramifications. Soon to come, pressure group Coalition Against Corruption is petitioning Shraj to investigate allegations of corrupt practices in public institutions. And later on, Vulture for Chop Bar Meat. We'll be back. It's Behind the News and linking up with all our regional FM stations. If you are somewhere in the two upper regions, you're on Radio Upper West and Yura Radio and on Radio Savannah in Tamale. This quick test coming from Aziz02. Aziz02 is saying that I think the practical solution to the fuel increase is a commensurate increase in salary and not reduction in fuel prices. The negotiations must be as fast as possible to forestall any future escalations. Thank you. And thank you, Aziz02, from Gomwa Ekropon. The Coalition Against Corruption has presented a petition to Shraj to investigate corruption allegations against former government officials. What is contained in their petition? Well, joining us in the studio to look at it is Chief Ali Joseph. You are warmly welcome.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us your position in the coalition?
I'm the spokesperson for the Coalition Against Corruption.
Spokesperson?
Yes, please.
Why are you coming up with such a petition?
Clearly, we are coming up with such a petition since this judgment debt issue came up. We were gathering facts and considering other options and listening to the media, and we've realized that one very important institution that is left out in this case is the Commission for Human Rights and Administrative Justice, because all other investigative bodies that have been asked to conduct investigations have been doubted upon by either one party or the other. But you and I would agree that the Commission for Human Rights and Administrative Justice have the track record of investigating public officials. And that is why we've petitioned the Commission for Human Rights and Administrative Justice. And again, looking at the judgment debt issue, we begin to ask ourselves, how come we've gotten into this mess? That is the question. And realizing that the tender process in 2000, prior to the award of contract, was set aside by ex-government officials, and the contract awarded to companies that never participated in the tendering process. And that is why we are asking that the ex-government officials should be investigated for the roles they've played in setting out the constitution, the constitutional mandatory act, that is the Procurement Act at 63. And this is the major reason why we are asking that an investigation should be conducted into this matter.
So it means for you, you are even leaving the Wayomake case aside and asking for a different thing.
Clearly, the crux of the matter is that what has led to this incident? And truly, to your words, in from the CAN 2008, it started from 2003 when the tendering process was open and bidders were asked to come. And bidders actually went in, and the tender review committee actually agreed that these are the contractors they recommended to be awarded to. But at the end of the day, in the memo that Honorable Yaw Osafumafu sent to Cabinet, 27 July 2005, advised Cabinet that the Shanghai group that we are bringing on board has never participated in any tender process. Corsa Michelati neither participated in any of this tender process. We have companies that have participated and have been duly qualified to be awarded this contract. So the contract should go to them. But ex-President Kufuor and his cabinet by then said, no way. They've set aside the constitutional mandatory process and awarded the contract to companies that were not qualified. And that is the crux of the matter. And that has brought this mess today. And they should be called to answer.
So who are the officials you are talking about?
We are talking of ex-President Kufuor. We are talking of Honorable Yaw Osafumafu. We are talking of Obi Amwa. And we are talking of the former CEO of the CAN 2008. These are the officials that should be called. And must be investigated.
Yeah, but in your presentation, it means you have a lot of facts to point to them. You've just mentioned the issue that those who were awarded the contract did not really participate in the tendering. What other things are you presenting?
Clearly, with me here, it's a cabinet memo signed by Honorable Yao Osafumafu, 27th July 2005. And listen to what Oya Osafumafu said in the cabinet memo, that the Shanghai group did not submit any bid. But you and I would agree that the Shanghai group did construct the sports stadium. Again, Osafumafu in his memo to cabinet said, on the other hand, the recommendations arising out of the tender would be set aside. Then we should marshal our forces and make a decision which can defend nationally and internationally. That is Osafumafu in 2005 advising then ex-president Kufuor and his cabinet that we should marshal forces if we set aside the tender process. So now we've come to the stage that ex-president Kufuor and his cabinet should defend themselves nationally. We've not even gone international itself. Nationally, they should defend themselves, but not President Mills, Madame Betimo, Idrisu, and others to be defending by themselves. But these officials, that within, they've admitted that we are going on the wrong path. And if we go on the wrong path, we should defend ourselves. And this is the time for them to defend themselves.
Won't some people say it's a little escapist because there is an issue being looked at? And instead of perhaps roping in all, you are looking at just a segment of it.
Clearly, the issue has a basis. You cannot leave the basis and go and start from the rooftop. The foundation, what has led to the collapse of the building? That would be the question you ask yourself. Is it the foundation? If it is the foundation, what do? You investigate. And that is where we are coming from. You can't go and start from the top. If you start from the top, you are doing no investigation. You are doing no work. But when you start from the basis, it gives you an informed mind. It gives you an informed decision as to where you are going. And if the investigation has started from the basis, I believe the mess in which we are all spending time to talk about wouldn't have occurred. But we've all failed and we've jumped onto the top and we are debating it whilst the base is there.
So from your perspective, assuming they've gone to Yoko, you wouldn't have presented this petition. Is that what we have to understand?
Clearly. Basically, I do accept that if they have gone to Yoko and the minority have agreed that they should go to Yoko, and we as citizens have had respect for Yoko and have not raised issues of bias against Yoko. After all, we want a fair investigation. We want a fair outcome. We wouldn't have even written this petition. But when doubts were raised about Yoko, that Yoko will be biased in terms of the outcome, Yoko reports to the Attorney General's office. We said, wait a minute, whatever outcomes Yoko is bringing will be doubtful. So let's go to Shraj, which has a track record, which is made up of men and women of competence and integrity. And nobody would doubt the verdict that will come out of Shraj. And that is why we went to Shraj. And that is why we chose the path. And we know Shraj.
So to what extent are you prepared to go on to explore that issue and let Shraj really take up this issue?
Clearly, this morning, we're very much impressed with the officials of Shraj. They received the document and assured us that investigation will start by the appropriate officials, which we were very much excited. But that notwithstanding, we are not coming back to sit down, clearly. We will follow up the issue, even still do further questioning. How much did Shanghai Group at the end of the day end in the construction of the stadium as compared to their initial proposal, as compared to the basis that even led to the award of contract to Shanghai Group? These are further issues that we will all explore as citizens, because this matter has come up and we have to explore all avenues, all those who have gotten and were part of the process in bringing about this mess should be brought to book and should be questioned.
Your petition is coming on the heels of the accusations being made, and naturally people and we've heard the Attorney General also talk about that same fact. People would have thought that perhaps you would have roped in other possible present government officials who are also being accused of one malfeasance or the other, so that they would look at it as a national concern. Don't you think you could have done so if you are really seeking the interest of everyone?
We are really seeking the interest of everyone, and every Ghanaian should be interested in this matter. And that is why bringing current government officials bringing current government officials for what? Bringing in them for what? Because this is a judgment debt that has been paid by an individual. And the court looked at the merit of the issues and said and awarded the judgment debt. It is not like somebody sat in his office and called Mr. A or B, come for this set sum. It was a court of competent jurisdiction that said this set amount should be paid to this individual per the facts that we have. You just let me ask you this question. Can you walk to the courts of Ghana and say, oh, GBC, excuse me to say, GBC is owing me, so please pay me. And because GBC failed to put up a defense, the court just said, okay, go to GBC and collect this money. Definitely the judge is a man of integrity. We'll look at the merits. Do you have a case? And just if you have a case, they will tell you, okay, you have a right to go for that money. And that was what happened in this Wyoming case.
So who are the others joining you in this petition?
Oh, I have Alhaji Abubakar Bawa, Charles Ajima from Kumasi. We have Professor Puaire from Upper West Region, Ni Otenka from the Greater Accra Region. These are persons who have joined me in the petition, and we are fighting the court.
Do you have a particular political persuasion?
Political persuasion? No way. I have no any political persuasion in this matter.
No one is behind it.
Why? Look at me sitting my age. Why would somebody be behind me? Why would somebody be directing me? If somebody would, then let the person come and take. If you know how to direct, then come and take the steering. I'm not that person to be pushed and directed around. That's, to be honest with you, I am not. I only have an interest in this issue, and an angle with regards to this issue has been left out, and that is why we are pushing forward. But no one can direct me, and I assure you that.
We'll be monitoring what happens, Ashraj.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chief Ali Joseph, for joining us. He's a spokesperson for the group Coalition Against Corruption. They petitioned Ashraj to investigate corruption allegations against former government officials. It's still behind the news. And you are live on Ubuntu 96.5 and also Unique 95.7. Before we move on, let's pick some of the tests we have here. Paying workers' salaries only can be a solution to the problem. The value will be the same. Habib is sending that one from India. And Ishaq Ahmed, Tamale Nurses Training College. It will be a painful experience if Professor Mills and the NDC hierarchy sit unconcerned for the party to go into opposition without settling all the wranglings in the party. And a last one from Accra Police saying the withdrawal of subsidy wouldn't be the best decision at this point in time. And trained teachers of the Kwa East District have not been paid for 17 months now. We appeal to the president to come to our aid. Joe sent in that one. Parliamentary primaries of the NDC will take place in most constituencies this Saturday. One area that promises to catch the attention of political watchers is the Upper West Region. Behind the News speaks to Eric Dakura, Upper West Regional Secretary, on this issue as to how they are preparing. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes.
Right. Sir, you've
put in some preparations for Saturday's primaries in your region. Can you just give us what you've done to make it peaceful and also smooth?
Thank you, Bright, and your listeners. Yes, as required, the national executives or the national party hierarchy is to support the constituencies with some finances to enable them organize these primaries. And in the link to all the constituencies, they have prepared their delegates list. We have directed them to meet the various electoral commissioners in the various constituencies concerned so as to ensure that these delegates lists and then the ballot papers will be printed in the manner that everything will be very clear and very identical for everybody to see and vote properly.
Mr. Dakura, we understand there is some disquiet about some of the aspirants who were disqualified during the vetting process. Have you responded to some of these issues before the primaries?
Yes. Fortunately, I think it's only one constituency that has this problem. That is Nadoli West constituency. One of the aspirants was disqualified, and he's in the person of Gale ZK Roger. And he's put a petition, he's petitioned the General Secretary through the regional chairman. And this evening, the regional chairman convened a meeting. Then we went to the meeting, the regional executive, we discussed the subject, and we resolved that we forward the petition to the general secretary for necessary action. So with our recommendation, and that is done, and hopefully tomorrow we expect to hear something from the general secretary's office.
So it means you've not corresponded with Roger Gali at all about the issue?
Really, it's a petition that is going to the general secretary. So once he's passed the petition through the regional chairman, what is required or expected is that the regional chairman is supposed to put a comment on the petition then forward it to general secretary's action, because he's the one that has been petitioned.
Yeah, but
so
it's getting to time, and you know the anxieties might be rising. What do you say?
I know for sure that the person that has been petitioned is one of the personalities who is on top of issues. So I'm convinced that while the petition gets to him and they are considering it, definitely they will take into consideration the time period, and something definitely will be done by way of either suspension or pushing the day forward.
Yeah. So how many candidates are contesting?
While the committee is going to do that, let me not preempt what the committee will be doing.
Okay. So when exactly do you expect a response?
Like I said, we are expecting the response tomorrow. If the petition gets there tomorrow, then they are able to look into it. They will definitely, they know that there's the agency attached to this petition. So definitely I'm hopeful that tomorrow, by the close of the day, we would hear something from GS.
So in all, how many candidates are contesting?
We have 19 candidates contesting in the 6 incumbent constituencies that we have in the Upper West region.
Do you have some going on opposed?
No.
All are being challenged?
All are being challenged.
And
we have only 2 ladies.
Only 2 ladies?
Mm.
Who are they contesting against?
Oh, they are contesting, let me say, they are contesting against themselves. They are in the same constituency.
Does that mean you've not encouraged your ladies to really come up?
We have encouraged our ladies, and I said before in one of your mediums, we have reduced the filing fee by 50%, but yet still it's only these 2 brave ladies who have been able to come up for the race.
Well, we'll leave it here for now, and we'll still be listening as to what happens in the case of Roger Gali. But for now, Mr. Eric Dakura, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you, Bright, and you're listening.
But joining us on the line now is George Lawson, who is Deputy General Secretary of the NDC in charge of operations. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, you are talking about primaries this Saturday. Do you think the party is really prepared for it?
Very much prepared.
You don't have any challenges at all, because we've just listened to one in the...
Not at all.
Not in terms of what you are deploying onto the ground, but with some of the people who were interviewed, perhaps being disqualified and not agreeing with their disqualification.
Not at all. The fact is, we have guidelines, and if you don't meet our standards, yes, you will be disqualified, that's fair. And guided by our constitution as well. So we don't have any challenges. Challenges, not at all. We are prepared, more than prepared for Saturday. And Saturday comes Saturday, primaries will be nationwide.
Yeah. So you are aware about this Nadoli case? Are you?
Oh, I've been told. But the guy was disqualified by the national office, and I wish you talk to those on the national team. They will tell you. They'll give you correct information with regards to his disqualification, why he was disqualified. I have been briefed, but I would prefer you talking to the leader or members of the thing, and they will tell you what actually happened that led to the disqualification. And he's not the only person in the world. In the Volta region, 15 people have been disqualified. And the Northern region, 3 people did not meet our applications were not accepted. And in Western, I think 1 Greater Accra for now. We still deciding. We're in the process of writing the last person now. So we are yet to decide whether anybody is going to fall out or not.
Yeah. So talking about a place like New Edubias, we understand there is some problems there too in relation to the same disqualification.
Yes, I heard that. But information reaching me indicates that that guy is not in good standing. And our guidelines say you must be a member in good, of good standing. So if you are not in good standing, then you don't meet our requirements. That's it.
What does it mean when you say not in good standing?
If you are not a paid-up member, if you are not a paid-up member, then you don't qualify. And I've been told, reliably informed, that that guy was he's not a paid-up member. And that's that. And he was disqualified based on that.
Yeah. Before you even made it public that people can pick faults, did you make it known to them that these are the conditionalities for anyone who wants to stand in the primaries?
It was explicitly set in the guidelines that we issued. Before we opened nomination, the guideline was issued, and all those things were spelled out, black and white, and the guideline. So they are all aware of it.
Yeah. Some say sometimes there are underhand dealings because people do not have connections with those at the national level, or perhaps the constituency is trying to elbow them out. Would you say that in any of the cases, this has been the challenge?
Not at all. This is untrue. We operate under the doctrine of fairness. If anybody says that that person has been very unfair, is being very unfair to the national executive. In the case of even GDSC, those who went were all nowhere leadership. Even it was led by Amar Benyuadu. She's currently, you know, she's a minister, but somebody who has held the position of a women organizer, national women organizer before. In the case of what happened in Upper West was led by one of our vice chairmen with other officers. One of our officers. So it will be very unfair on anybody's part to say, if you don't have any deal, there's nothing of that sort. We will place under the doctrine of fairness, I insist.
Well, we want to thank you very much, George Lawson, for your time too.
It's a
That's the Deputy General Secretary of the NDC in charge of operations. You are still on Behind the News, live on Twin City Radio and also on Radio Central together with Volta Star Radio. Vultures, when you hear about them, what comes to mind? Well, Luck alluded two persons today when they were arrested by the police on suspicion of selling vultures as chicken to some food vendors in Koforidua. The police grabbed them with the support of a good Samaritan. Well, we have joining us now our Eastern Regional Correspondent, Kwame Onuma, to tell us the details. Kwame, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you.
How were the two people nabbed?
Well, they are put behind the bars and they will appear before court tomorrow.
Yeah, how were they arrested?
Well, this morning somebody who is a good Samaritan, he saw some two young men who were the slaughtering fowls. And then he drew closer to them to see that they were not real fowls that are consumed by human beings, but rather vultures. And then interrogating them, one of them took to his ears. He is known as Prince, but he was able to get the other one, who is a 13-year-old JHS-1 pupil, and was brought to the police station for further interrogation. Thereafter, he was also able to mention one lady, a 65-year-old woman, who has been patronizing their services for about a year. So it was that they rushed to get hold of that lady also at Asokware, which is a suburb of Koforidua here. She was also put behind bars to be sent to court tomorrow to be interpreted before the public why they should not be arrested for committing that offense.
So did you find out how long they've been doing that?
Yes, the police officer said that the boy himself, who was a GHS pupil arrested, mentioned that she's been dealing in this with the lady for the past 1 year. So it's that there's been something that they've been doing to earn their living. And when they do it, the woman being a trader also send it to other people who've been preparing food to sell the other day. It isn't even impossible to get some of the kebab sellers also using this as maybe what, guinea fowls or any type of meat that we use to consume. So there and the chop barkeepers and other food vendors were patronizing. So when she buys it, she adds to other products that she sells to her consumers. And others also came to buy and they said it. You know, in the Ghanaian context, the middleman between producer and the final consumer can never be quantified. You know, it will pass through so many persons. The chain of the value chain, you can deduce from it that so many people will be patronized before it reaches the final end. You see that so many hands are touched.
So Kwame, how are food vendors reacting to this and those who patronize their restaurants?
Really, when the report reached the police station, many people were rushing to it, and there were some people who've been patronizing maybe hospitality in the as soon as they saw that they lost appetite in going there again. And there are some people also who came here as soon as we mentioned as I said, they will cease. Others also said that instead of taking meat, they rather prefer fish to it because they don't know the type of meat that will be given to them. And this reminds us of what was happening in Kumasi some time ago when certain young men were also caught holding this and they're selling along the streets. And when they were mentioned, they were put behind. By the policeman.
Kwame Nonoma, thank you for that particular update. That's our Eastern Regional Correspondent. But the Municipal Police Commander for New Jabin is DSP Christopher Kweku. DSP, good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, good evening, my brother.
Yes, sir. Is this the first time that you are having such a case?
Yeah, I've been in Jabin for the past 1.5 months. And since I came, this is the first time I'm having such a case.
Yeah, how did the people alert you?
Please come again.
How were you told about it?
About what?
About what had happened.
What has happened, please?
That is the use of vultures as meat for chopper operators.
All right, today at about 11 o'clock, the Municipal Police Command received a complaint to the effect that two boys were slaughtering vultures at Kufuria Zongu. On receipt of the information, policemen proceeded to the place, and two young men were spotted slaughtering the vultures. they were given a chase, and one of them managed to escape. His name is Prince. The other one was arrested. He's a 13-year-old junior high school pupil. He was arrested together with eight dead vultures. He was brought to the station, and in the course of interrogation, he mentioned that he's been doing this for the past 3 years, and for the past 1 year, he's been supplying one Hajia Yawu of Asokore, Ufodi Asokore, who is a trader. That's any time they go for the vouchers, they supply this woman with the vouchers.
Yeah.
So on receipt of the complaint, the woman was arrested.
You've spoken about exactly how they've been arrested. So what are you telling food vendors now?
Yeah, they've been arrested, and they'll be arraigned before court tomorrow. For the boy will be charged with the offence of preparation to commit crime to wit, selling unwholesome food, uh-huh. And the woman will be charged for abetment or conspiracy to commit crime to wit, selling unwholesome food. My advice to the public is that it's a worrying story, especially those of us who patronize guinea fowl at various beer bars and at the various, I wouldn't say restaurants, bars. Because the vultures, as I saw at the station today, if you should remove the feather, the feathers of the vultures,
they look appetizing, eh?
No, it's not appetizing. It's like minus the feathers, it will be very difficult for one to differentiate.
Just like any other bird.
It's between a vulture and a fowl.
DSP, because of our time, we'll leave it here. But thank you very much for joining us. DSP Christopher Kweku is the Municipal Police Commander for New Jabin. Just before we go, Thomas from Saboba, President North, does not deserve a second term in office. And Obudai Gabriel, GIJ, saying Trotromis have taken on due advantage of the four price hike. Something should really be done about this. And Kingsley Gosu BA, government should increase the salaries of workers to correspond with the four price increase. And that is where we wrap it all up for today. On behalf of the rest of the crew, my name is Kingsley of Interest.